This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Not to get all Schumpeterian on you here, that's after Joseph Schumpeter, the Austrian economist, but part of what happens when economies grow is something called creative destruction. New industries are formed and old ones die. There are booms and busts, and growth moves from place to place, and if people are lucky, they can move with it. So today, Marketplace's Sabri Benishour visits the destruction side of that equation, a place where things have changed a whole lot, but people still remember.
In a musty room, an afternoon ray of southern sunshine is making Glenn Hayes glow. Or maybe it's that he's doing something he hasn't done in decades.
That's a good pile of tobacco. The leaf is crinkly.
He's grading tobacco.
B3, you think? Means middle of the stalk.
Hayes was born in 1936. He's one of the last of his generation here in Mullins, South Carolina, population 4,500. He's come to visit the state's tobacco museum here, and his hands parse the dried golden leaves on display. It's been decades since he's done this for a living.
We would get up before day, before I went to school that morning when I was 9, 10 years old, and we would lay tobacco out for our parents to grade that day, and about 80% of our income came from tobacco.
With 41 warehouses, tobacco was once king in Mullins, and Hayes was at different points pauper and prince. His dream as a boy was to become a buyer for a big cigarette company, and he did it. He ended up traveling the South, going from auction to auction, grading and buying tobacco each fall. There's still a recording of one of his old auctions.
If you listen real close, if he calls Reynolds, that's me, and I'm bidding with this hand and with my eyes or with whatever, but I'm moving all the time looking at tobacco, you know.
In the early 80s, at tobacco's height, $120 million would flow through the warehouses of this town and onto farmers and croppers and restaurants. Tobacco marked the calendar, and tobacco marked the social life. Big bands would play in the cavernous warehouses. People lived the crop's ups and downs together, which, Hayes says, connected them in a way that's rare now.
And I remember a farmer coming to me one time, and he says, I got an awful crop, Glenn, I can't help it. And it wasn't a good crop, but I wouldn't have told him that for nothing in the world. He'd worked just as hard as the next man. Everybody tried to help him if they could. If you could stretch a grade, you did, you know. And we all did that.
Hayes' old friend, Jimmy Daniel, who worked at a warehouse and has now passed away, put it this way in another of the museum's archival recordings.
It was hard work, like anything is. And, of course, the farmer fared good, the warehouse fared good. If he chased the devil, the warehouse caught the devil, too.
That just means it filters down. We all are taking a diminished return here.
That's Reggie McDaniel. He's curator of the museum.
The bids weren't good, and the tobacco was not good, and the farmers didn't get A1 top prices. The warehouse suffered along with the farmers. If the farmer caught the devil, the warehouse caught the devil too.
McDaniel is standing near a 100-year-old barn that was rebuilt inside the museum, and the smell of tobacco hangs thick in the air.
It's got a sweet, earthy smell. My dad used to say it smelled like college.
Why do you say that?
Because it pays for your college.
Tobacco was good to Mullins, but tobacco is also addictive and deadly. It killed 100 million people in the 20th century. And as people began to realize that, smoking declined, government subsidies were withdrawn, tobacco farming also became mechanized and then shifted overseas, along with other industries like textiles. And then it was Mullins that caught the devil. Today, it has the highest unemployment rate in the state.
The jobs eliminated all the textiles and all the companies have left. There's no incentives for people to stay here.
Antonio Williams is hanging out under a pecan tree in a lot full of rubble and weeds. It used to be a small mall before it was torn down. Sometimes people come here for day work. Right now, a few kids are running around and a few old men are sitting on milk crates drinking.
It's not for a young person here. My son is 17 years old and he got a scholarship. He's an Admin Honor Roll student and I just want him to get him up out of here.
The story of Mullins is a story of lots of small towns in the tobacco belt.
Eldred Prince Jr. is professor of American history at Coastal Carolina University in Conway.
Nobody, no sensible person would lament the loss of tobacco as a substance. It has a lot to answer for in the illness that it has caused. On the other hand, the culture that it inspired and created, there are some valuable things.
To have entire towns working on the same thing, winning or losing together, and sharing work.
we'll go over and help you today at your farm, and then tomorrow you can come over and help us. Swapping work, it was called. It built neighborhoods like that.
Of course, plenty of southern towns survived, even thrived, after tobacco. They replaced their tobacco fields with a Boeing plant or an auto manufacturer, or in many cases turned to tourism.
We're very much part of the Sun Belt here, but Mullins is still in the shade.
In front of one of Mullins' last two remaining tobacco warehouses, a downpour has started. The warehouse is an antique mall now. They're good antiques, but they seem small in the immense space. In Mullins, South Carolina, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.